There are idols all over the world. We know there are sports idols, there are Hollywood idols, there are political idols. Well, this is a literal idol in North Korea where people are meant to worship a political figure. But this is one of the biggest monuments in Washington, D.C., and it's to a man called Martin Luther King Jr. And the problem is, when I try to minister almost anywhere, I get people confusing the great German reformer of almost 500 years ago with the civil rights activist of the 1960s from America. John 8:32 says, "And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." It is absolutely essential that we know the truth of history in order to recognize the lies of propaganda and of indoctrination. We need to study the Word of God so that we can be freed from the deceptions of the world. In the book of Revelation, we read, "Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. He laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years, and he cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal on him so that he should deceive the nations no more." In Revelation 12, verse 7, we read, "And war broke out in heaven, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world." It's crystal clear. Satan is plainly deceiving the nations. The scriptures categoric about it. Satan is deceiving the nations now. Education teaches you how to think. How to think critically. I remember having a good education like that in Rhodesia, where the teacher would challenge us to think outside of the textbook. Don't repeat it just because it's in the textbook. Just because the textbook doesn't make it right. Do you see the kind of people who write textbooks? Never trust history written by the victors. The victors lie. Wartime propaganda becomes peacetime textbooks. Never trust the textbook. Never trust the official version. Think for yourself. And if we regurgitated something that was in the textbooks, the teacher challenged us. You have to think critically. Now, I happen to have a good history teacher. He was even a member of parliament in Rhodesia's government. But, of course, in those days, a member of parliament only served a few weeks of any given year. They were expected to have a real job as well. These days, they've made it an entire profession of how to get rich. Whereas back at that time, they got almost nothing. I think it was $500 a year to be a member of parliament in Rhodesia. You had to be a gainfully employed person to be able to be a member of parliament. How things have changed. But education teaches you how to think. Indoctrination teaches you what to think. When you have a politically correct line, this is what you must believe. That's not education anymore, that's now indoctrination. The ability to think critically is becoming less and less common. In fact, common sense is not common at all. We are being subjected to the greatest flood of misinformation and disinformation in the history of the world. Misinformation is error. It could either be as a result of sincere mistakes or typographical errors. Frequently, trusting in unreliable sources results in misunderstanding the facts of the matter. So there's no malice necessary, but the person might have genuinely believed, sincerely been mistaken, they really thought so. A misinformation is just an error, which could be as simple as a typographical error that got repeated. But disinformation is the intentional distortion of events or issues. While misinformation is unintentional, disinformation is intentional. In fact, communist governments established departments of disinformation. That's what they're called, departments of disinformation. The goal is to manufacture deceit and to confuse issues and to distract the masses. God is truth. The Word of God is truth. Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. In the Westminster Larger Catechism, under the duties required in the ninth command, "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor," the Westminster Catechism lists the duty of preserving and promoting the truth, the duty to stand for the truth and to do so from the heart, the duty to speak the truth and only the truth in matters of judgment and justice, the duty to speak the truth at all times, the duty to study and practice everything true, noble, lovely, and of good report, which is a large reason why there is a Reformation Society. We are seeking to do just that, especially with regard to the heroes of the faith. Now, under the sins forbidden in the Ninth Commandment, the Westminster Standards includes the sin of giving false evidence, the sin of lying. Notice when you put a microscope to a lot of truth, you find actually it's all made up of lies. There's the sin of concealing the truth, the sin of misconstruing intentions, exaggerating minor faults, the sin of perverting the truth to a wrong meaning. All of these are sins forbidden under the Ninth Commandment. Truth is truth, even if nobody believes it. A lie is a lie, even if everybody believes it. There was a slogan, a bumper sticker when I was converted, which I remember repeating many a times: God says it, I believe it, that settles it. But the further I went along, the more I realized one of those statements is unnecessary. Whether I believe it or not doesn't make it any more true or not. God said it, that settles it. Now, of course, it's good for me if I believe it, but whether I believe it or not is actually not the point. If God's word declares it is true, even if 100% of the people vote against it. Truth is not determined by majority opinion. The truth doesn't change just because you don't want to hear it. Truth sounds like hate to those who hate truth. Truth is now called the new hate speech. In fact, George Orwell said, during a time of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes an offensive, in fact, a revolutionary act. The scripture teaches us that Satan is deceiving the nations. So if we find ourselves in full agreement with Hollywood and the United Nations, we need to stop and carefully consider where we have been deceived. Because if you find the whole of Hollywood is saying, this is the most important, this is the greatest, these are the people that are the worst, this is the most vital, this is the most relevant, and if we agree, we've been deceived. Because Satan's deceiving the nations. If you agree with the world on the major issues, then Satan has deceived you. That's true for economics, that's true for history, that's true for sociology, for anthropology, psychology, spirituality. It's true for everything. Propaganda is the calculated manipulation of public opinion to serve political and ideological interests, and it is pervasive. In fact, for many people, the truth is just what they're told from TV, and the TV not only tells them what to think and why to think and how to think, but how to think about it. Edward Bernays, a really devious individual who was the founder of America's Committee for Propaganda, and he's the author of the textbook on propaganda written in 1928. He is, in fact, also the nephew of Sigmund Freud, who is very dangerous in all the things he taught. Edward Bernays said, the conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of the country. Now, he's not exposing it, he's approving of it, because in fact he set it up. Propaganda aims to do other people's thinking for them. Propaganda today has moved into prop agenda, not only controlling what we think, but how we think and what we think about. Just think how you can have the entire world all talking about the same thing at the same time. Whether it's sports, or scandal, or marriage, or a tragedy, suddenly everyone can be on, or you know, it can be HIV, and you can even see the church following it. The Beatles can sing, all we need is love, the next thing you've got church saying, yes, that's the gospel, all you need is love. And they brought out New Testaments, we've got them, you know? But just love written in hippie, psychedelic style on the cover, and that's now the new name of the Bible, love, and then, you know, the way, or then peace, and then peace. We've literally got Bibles here where peace is on the cover, because that was the big thing, everything is peace. And then unity, yes, unity, that's the gospel. So the world makes a chant, a mantra, and you often find the church following it. Anyone recognize where this comes from? These words on the screen. It's from a specific book. 1984, George Orwell. You should read it. Winston, 2 Minutes Hate, Big Brother's Watching You, War is Peace, ignorance is strength, freedom is slavery, many love, many plenty, many true thought crimes, you know. That's all 1984 stuff. George Orwell was a communist, someone very enthusiastic and sincerely pro-communist. But then he visited Moscow, and that sort of changed everything. And out of his disillusionment as to the reality of this communist utopia that he had expected to find, came Animal Farm. All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. And 1984, where it's a thought crime to think other than through Newspeak, and Big Brother is watching you. And these two books actually were textbooks when I was at school in Rhodesia, and what a pity we don't have books like that as textbooks anymore, because they're absolutely foundational to understanding the inside workings of the mind of a communist. You can't understand communism if you don't understand the principles that have been taught by George Orwell in 1984 in Animal Farm. They're absolutely brilliant. Political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable. That is just so true. You've got to have been inside the mind of a communist to understand how this could be so. George Orwell also said, the further a society drifts from truth, the more it will hate those who speak the truth. When in the history of the world have we had thought crimes and people being punished for what they call now hate speech and hate crimes, and this whole nonsense that there's only one politically agreed way, and if you divert from it, then you are to be penalized, fired, even prosecuted. George Orwell said the people will believe what the media tells them to believe, primarily through television and newspapers. In the Soviet Union, they called it propaganda. In the West, we call it news. The media is not a reflection of reality. Do you know the amount of times you've heard people saying, I saw with my own eyes on television? There is no such thing as photographic evidence anymore. They can twist and manipulate the whole lot. Hollywood's proof of that. I mean, I've shown you science fiction films that look so real that you think, wow, it must have happened. Meanwhile, it's completely fiction. What lies behind us and what lies before us are small matters compared to what lies straight to our faces. Tell lie vision. That's how you could pronounce it. My job is to destroy what's left of your imagination by feeding you endless dosage of sugar-coated mindless garbage. It could also say, my job is to keep you distracted while restricting the limits of public debate. I sensationalize talking points to keep you focused on the trivial while ignoring the important questions. I never contradict the status quo, because what I really do is deliver state-sponsored propaganda. What I omit is often more significant than what I share. Is that not true? That's why the Christians in Sudan always said to me, why don't the media in the West speak up for us? Why doesn't Nelson Mandela speak out for us? Why doesn't Bishop Tutu speak out for us? Here we're being bombed and crucified and persecuted and enslaved. And so on. We thought they stood up for black people's rights against oppression and colonialism. I'd say, well, actually the friends of the Muslims who persecuted me, they don't care about you. But we thought, you know, everything we under, we thought they really cared for the little guy. They, why would they not be focusing on us? And you get the news media saying, without fear or favor. You know, whatever news is fit to print. And they just claim to be covering, you know, CNN is there, wherever anything is happening. No, they're not. They're not where Christians are being persecuted. They will not report that. They will not identify Muslim or communist atrocities. They twist things. They'll focus on a scandal of some Hollywood character or somebody's divorce while a world-shaking event has been completely ignored. The media represents the truth in our society, but the truth lies. The news media lies by omission, by changing the emphasis, by distortion, or just outright lies, putting words and images into your mouth and images into your eyes that were never even there. It's mind control. So the modern slave is limited in the parameters of what he thinks and what he thinks about if he is getting his primary source of information from the mainstream media, whether TV, newspapers, internet, or whatever. Joseph Stalin said, America is like a healthy body and its resistance is threefold. Of course, he's talking 1930s and 40s and 50s. it's patriotism, it's morality, and it's spiritual life. If we can undermine these three areas, America will collapse from within. Now, he said that back in the 1950s, actually. From cradle to grave, the governments and the media are actually holding minds prisoner by brainwashing. If you don't control your mind, somebody else will. We must strive to be biblically accurate rather than politically correct. So often everything is politically correct, but what about biblically accurate? To be right with God is often meant to be in trouble with men. A.W. Tozer said that, and that is so true. I'd rather offend someone into heaven than flatter them into hell. It is said that a missionary's job description is to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. Better to be slapped with the truth than kissed with a lie, says a Russian proverb. And I think that's a lot of what we'll do tonight. As Karl Marx declared, the first battlefield is the rewriting of history. You see, when you hear about communists disarming people, when they take over a country, they try to get the weapons out of the hands of the average population. Disarming people. But actually, that's not their first battle. Their first battle is to steal and disarm the people of their history, their identity, their past, their heroes. The statues must be replaced. They've got to replace all the heroes of the past with new heroes and new saints. You can't have Jesus Christ and the heroes of the faith before you as your examples. No, they've got to give you other examples. These might be degenerate Hollywood types. There might be some superficial sports types. There might be some fictional Hollywood types. There might be some mass murdering thugs. It doesn't matter. They're going to give you a new series of heroes and a new identity and a new history. That's why the first battlefield is the rewriting of history.
New street names.
That's also important, renaming things. On any given day, you will be confronted with deception. The news media and the entertainment industry actually use deceit as their stock in trade. One example of how Christians have bought into propaganda is how many, quote, with respect and even reverence, the sayings attributed to Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. In recent months, I have received numerous communications from friends and respected colleagues circulating quotes that were reported to have come from Martin Luther King. This is, in fact, his statue in Washington. Huge statue, in fact. And there's a lot of things attributed to Martin Luther King, some of which he said, some of which he didn't say. How do you like the depiction of police and dogs in this kind of new art, as they're trying to depict history in statues? Is there anything in history where they had statues like this before? You know, horrible things were done to Christians, but we don't have statues of the Inquisition or the Roman Empire's tortures and so on of Christians in this way. It's just, what a horrible depiction. Notice the man's got no weapon in his hand. He doesn't have a petrol bomb.
And the dog is like a wolf.
Oh, the dog looks absolutely hideous. Mm. And this policeman is dehumanized. No, this is America. This is America. Okay, now here are just some of the quotes floating around the internet right now and social media, all purporting to come from Martin Luther King. Some of these quotes are great quotes, but he's not the source. Many of these predate him by years, decades, and even centuries. One of our people said that just this last Sunday at church, at a Church of England at St. Timothy's in Half Bay, they put up on the screen a quote from Dr. Martin Luther, the German reformer, which he said back in the 1500s, and it's had underneath Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So sometimes, that could have been a typographical, it could just be, you know, this person being so brainwashed, they saw the name Martin Luther and they just took the rest of it in. But okay, here's some of the quotes attributed to Martin Luther King. Some of which are profound, some of which are obvious, none of which are actually originally his. Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others? We will have to repent in this generation not merely for the vitriolic words and actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence of the good people. I'm sure that's true. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. Actually, Dr. Martin Luther, the German reformer, said that 450 years earlier, but anyway. It's now being attributed to Martin Luther King Jr. A man who won't die for something is not fit to live. Now, that's been said in many different ways by people. you know, if what you're living for isn't worth dying for, then it's not worth living for. Now, many times it's been said by many people through the centuries. That's not original. Only in the darkness can you see the stars. That's been said for centuries, actually. I have decided to stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. Wow. That sounds nice. If only that was true. Peace is not merely a distant goal that we seek, but a means by which we arrive at that goal. If you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But what if you do? You have to keep moving forward. That's true. But I see the first person to have said that. Take the first step in faith. You don't have to see the whole staircase. Just take the first step. The greatest purveyor of violence in the world today is my own government. Well, that has become true indeed, has it not? We cannot walk alone. As we walk, we must make the pledge that we will always march ahead. We cannot turn back. Injustice anywhere is a threat to injustice everywhere. Every man must decide whether he will walk in the light of creative altruism or in the darkness of destructive selfishness. Now, it's not that these are bad things, but what's bad is attributing it to a person who isn't the source at all. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. That's actually kind of biblical, but what's Kwanzaa wisdom? And how did he become the source of this?
And Peter, did he attribute this to anyone else who used
them? Not that we know of, but of course many of these things he may not have even said. It could just be followers and idolizers of him who are attributing it to him. He might have just said something, quoting from someone else in his mind, maybe not giving the source, but these are the things that are being attributed to him today. I mean, a lot of it you can't necessarily blame him for. This could just be the followers creating a whole industry. There are more quotes floating around in social media attributed to Martin Luther King than anyone else I've noticed. It's extraordinary. Well, with the exception of Charles Spurgeon. Charles Spurgeon would trump him, but only just. And there's all kinds of things. This hour in history needs a dedicated circle of transformed nonconformists. Our planet teeters on the brink of annihilation. Dangerous passions of pride, hatred, selfishness on thrones in our lives. Men do reverence before false gods of nationalism and materialism. The saving of a world from pending doom will come not through the complacent adjustment of the conforming majority, but through the creative maladjustment of non-conforming minority.
Creative maladjustment
of a non-conforming minority.
My goodness, how nice, nicely said.
It's nicely said, but I doubt if he actually is the originator of those phrases. And there's reason for it. Let freedom ring. This is also attributed to him. But actually, that is put on the bell at Philadelphia, and that dates back to 1776 in the independence of America. And that's been, in fact, a song and a slogan from the American War of Independence already in the 1770s. But now it's attributed to him in many a monument and statue. And I have a dream that is deeply rooted in the American dream. That one day my four children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Now, I think that's a great quote. Outstanding. But, of course, black economic empowerment and affirmative action do want to judge you by the color of your skin, not by the content of your character. So, the people who purport to follow Martin Luther King are not following this apparent quote attributed to him. Life's most persistent and urgent question, what are you doing for others? This sounds really good. We may have all come on different ships, but we're all in the same boat now. Referring to the kind of ships that came over to America. Oh, clever little phrase. Come with me if you want to live. I have no idea what that means, but... Now you also get other people putting things like this out, saying, wake up, this is not the dream he had. Showing, you know, these semi-dressed gangster... violent, drug-taking, maladjusted brats and gangsters and juvenile delinquents inhabiting the ghettos. In fact, today in America, 85% of all black children are born in single-parent homes with no father in sight. That wasn't so when Martin Luther King started his campaign. 85% of all children were born in homes with two parents, in an intact home. Now most are born in broken homes. You can have a 28-year-old grandmother, a 14-year-old mother, and a child, all on welfare. None of them have ever worked. And that's actually the actual case I'm talking about. And so the people are saying, when they see things wrong in America, say, this isn't the dream he had. And so he's the gold standard by which they're trying to bring the country back to righteousness, justice and equality. He speaks at a Christian university graduation service just across the road from here. When Cornerstone University had their graduation for a Christian university, 1st of December, end of last year, at the church just across the way, using that as the auditorium, I heard key speaker after key speaker, everyone from the Chancellor through to the valedictorian, quoting reverentially from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. At a recent ministers' conference, I even heard an overseas guest speaker quoting most positively from Martin Luther King. When I'm speaking to any interpreter almost anywhere in Africa, when I mention the great German reformer of Dr. Martin Luther, inevitably the translator will say, Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. And I'll have to say, no, I'm not talking about the American Civil Rights activists of the 1960s. I'm talking about the German reformer of the 1500s who launched the Protestant Reformation. And sometimes they've got to have me explain to even understand who I'm talking about. To think that we've reached the stage that more people seem to know the name of this civil rights activist from the 60s than the reformer who launched the Reformation. Many people are ignorant of the writings and the teachings of the great reformer who launched the Reformation. But they quote regularly and often erroneously from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I've had quotes that we know were said by Martin Luther, attributed to Martin Luther King. This is happening every day. At many of our camps and courses during our surveys and outreaches in the shopping malls, we find people listing Martin Luther King Jr. as one of the greatest people who've ever lived and as a leader that they greatly respect. It's one of the most common answers that we will get. More often than Gandhi, more often than Mandela, more often than anyone else that you can think of, you'll get people listing. He's one of the most quoted and reverenced people in the world today, it would seem. Certainly in politically correct circles, but apparently also in evangelical circles too, who've imbibed this rubbish, even in a Christian university. Now all this led me to undertake some research to find out what are the facts behind this modern idol. What did I know about Martin Luther King? I want to find out what's the truth. It's getting a bit irritating how many people misquote Martin Luther and attribute it to this 1960 civil rights activist. I want to know, okay, who is MLK Jr.? Every January, the US media goes into a frenzy of adulation for the so-called Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. King even has a national holiday declared in his honor, an honor accorded to no other American. They no longer have Columbus Day. They no longer have a day in remembrance of George Washington. They no longer have a day in, not even Abraham Lincoln. Nobody in America, no single American, has a holiday in his name except Martin Luther King. How about that? And who signed it into law? Bill Clinton. 1994, one of the first things he did. A liberal judge sealed the FBI files on King until the year 2027. You see, for the last 5 years of his life, the FBI, under J. Edgar Hoover, taped everything he'd said on the phone, every hotel room he's ever in, every room he's in, every meeting he's at, got taped. They bugged everything because of his links with well-known communists. And so the FBI has transcripts on everything Martin Luther King said, in public or in private, over the last 5 years, and everything he did, and everyone he met. And these files are sealed till 2027. Now, when a government has to seal files, something is wrong. There's normally a statute of limitations. Britain took the extraordinary step of sealing for 60 years the Lusitania files. Just absolutely unprecedented in British history. The Lusitania was a British ship that was sunk in 1915 by a German submarine, and it is quoted in almost every history book as a key reason why America came into the war on the British side against Germany in the First World War, which changed the entire balance of power, changed the whole shape of Europe, led to the collapse of the Russian, German and Austrian empires, led to all the rise of the communist states in Eastern Europe, the League of Nations. So many things came from America's interference in the First World War, and the sinking of Lusitania was the linchpin. That was the first key spark in what brought this about. And Britain sealed those files. And they finally came out in the early 1970s. And it turned out that this was a plan hatched by Winston Churchill while first Lord of the Admiralty. The sinking of Lusitania was planned, organized, orchestrated. It was carrying vast quantities of ammunition. They made sure the German government knew about it, so much so that the German embassy in New York put adverts, which can still be seen in the history books, warning travelers not to travel on the ship because this was traveling in a war zone and just carrying munitions of war in breach of blockade and the regulations of war. In terms of the Geneva Convention, anyone traveling on the ship was in danger of being sunk. And, in fact, the files revealed it was even worse than this. It was carrying weapons of war. There was a sister ship that was actually a warship that looked exactly the same. And the reason why the ship sank with just one torpedo was because the torpedo hit this vast amount of munitions in the bottom cargo section of the ship and blew it up. And it's even worse than that, because Winston Churchill, First Lord of the Admiralty, saw that there were different British naval ships that could be close that might have rescued or interrupted the Wolfpacks, ordered them to change courses, and even sent wire instructions to the ship to change course so it could put it right in the middle of a Wolfpack of submarines that they knew were there. It was as rigged as it could possibly be. And that was sealed for 60 years. But by the time it came out, most of the people who were affected and most of the people whose relatives had died there had themselves died, so the potential damage from the fallout has passed. The FBI has sealed these files till 2027. I would not be surprised when they get there that they sealed it for some more. What on earth are they hiding? So let's take a look at this modern day idol. He was born in 1929. King was the son of a black preacher known at the time only as Daddy King. We don't know if he had a first name. He was only known as Daddy King. And he named his son Michael. And so the man who we know as Martin Luther King Jr. was christened Michael King at birth, and that's what it says in his birth certificate, and that's the only name he ever officially had, January 13th, 1929. But in 1935, Daddy King had an inspiration to rename himself after the great Protestant reformer, Dr. Martin Luther. And so he declared to his congregation that henceforth they were to refer to him as Martin Luther King Jr. No, he'd be Martin Luther King. His son is to be called Martin Luther King Jr. So Michael King is suddenly transformed as a C. And this is a statue that was set up to Daddy King. None of this name changing was ever legalized in court or through any municipality. Daddy King's real name of his son to this day is still Michael King. You speak to someone like Michael King and see if they know who you're talking about. Now, in Michael Hoffman's Holiday for a Cheater, according to the testimony of King's best friend at that time, Reverend Larry Williams, the first public sermon King ever gave in 1947 at the Ebenezer Baptist Church, his father's church, that sermon was plagiarized word for word from a homily by Protestant clergyman Harry Emerson Fosdick, entitled Life is What You Make It. And he's a very famous man. He's even on the cover of Time magazine. He's written his own books. And so it's quite clearly that this young boy's first sermon was totally plagiarized. The first book that King wrote, Stride Towards Freedom, was plagiarized from numerous sources, all unattributed, according to documentation recently assembled by sympathetic pro-King scholars Keith Miller, Ira Zepp, and David Garrow. David Garrow almost worships King. But they admit, yep, well, it's true, he did just borrow these things from other books. No less an authoritative source than four senior editors of the papers of Martin Luther King Jr., which is an official publication of the Martin Luther King Center for Nonviolent Social Change, Incorporated, whose staff includes King's widow, Coretta Scott. They stated of King's writings at both Boston University and Crozer Theological Seminary that, judged retroactively by the standards of academic scholarship, his writings are tragically flawed by numerous instances of plagiarism. This is what his friends say. Appropriated passages are particularly evident in his writings in his major field of graduate study, systematic theology. King's essay, Place of Reason and Experience in Finding God, written at Crozer, pirated passages from the works of theologian Edgar Brightman, author of The Finding of God. Another of King's theses, Contemporary Continental Theology, written shortly after he entered Boston University, was largely stolen from a book by Walter Marshall Horton. By the way, king's office has very prominently a picture of who on the wall? Mahatma Gandhi, another favourite of many Christians to quote, even at theological graduation services. And he put this picture on the cover of his autobiography because he wants to paint himself in the shades of Mahatma Gandhi. But Mahatma Gandhi wasn't a Christian, was he? King's doctoral dissertation, A Comparison of the Conceptions of God in the Thinking of Paul Tillich and Harry Nelson Wyman, for which he is awarded his PhD in theology, contains more than 50 complete sentences plagiarized from the PhD dissertation of Dr. Jack Boozer, The Place of Reason in Paul Tillich's Concept of God. And according to the papers of Martin Luther King Jr., in King's dissertation, only 49% of the sentences in the section on Tillich contain five or more words that were King's own. In the Journal of American History, written by David Garrow, a leftist academic who is very sympathetic to King, he says King's wife, Coretta Scott King, who also served as a secretary, was an accomplice in his repeated cheating. She did the transcribing. She must know she's taken it straight from the books of others. There's books on this. King's Plagiarism, Imitation, Insecurity and Transformation. Plagiarism in the Culture War, the Writings of Martin Luther King Jr. and Other Prominent Americans. Reading Garrow's article, you led to the inescapable conclusion that King cheated because he had chosen for himself a political role in which a PhD would be useful. And lacking the intellectual ability to obtain this title fairly, he went after it by any means necessary. And I can't help but think immediately of Alan Busack, who in the same way had other people do his doctoral thesis. He is so busy doing political revelizing in Europe that the degrees he has given were plainly written by others. And apparently there's a whole crew that was just, they were employed just to do that so they could get him the paperwork while he did his revelizing. Why then, you might ask, did the professors at Crozer Theological Seminary in Boston University grant him passing grades and a PhD? In fact, the official transcript of record of Martin Luther King Jr. is hardly worthy of passes. There's a lot of ones and twos here. That is not the sort of thing that you normally get a pass for, let alone doctoral degree. There's a lot of course still in progress, and there's even audit, which means you attend the class but you don't do the exams. Garrow states on page 89 of his book, King's academic compositions, especially at Boston University, were almost without exception little more than summary descriptions and comparisons of other people's writings. That shouldn't even be allowed for a BA, let alone a PhD. Nonetheless, the papers almost always received desirable letter grades, strongly suggesting that King's professors didn't expect more from him. The editors of the Martin Luther King Jr. paper states that the failure of King's teachers to notice his pattern of textual appropriation, that's another nice word for plagiarism, is somewhat remarkable. Researcher Michael Hoffman tells us, actually this malfeasance of the professors is not at all that remarkable. King was politically correct. He was black, and he had political ambitions. The leftist professors were happy to award a doctorate to any such candidate, no matter how much fraud was involved. And we've seen this in our own country too. Mm-hmm. I think Alan Busack stands as the classic. Mm-hmm. He is like the Martin Luther King of this country. I'm sure he modelled himself on him, all the way down to stealing from the poor. Mm-hmm. Nor is it any wonder that it's taken 40 years for the truth about King's record of nearly constant intellectual piracy to be made public. Constant intellectual piracy is a good phrase that describes it quite well. And yet, all around America, you'll see Martin Luther King Jr. boulevards. It's just unbelievable. Supposed scholars who in reality shared King's vision of a racially mixed and a Marxist America purposely covered up his cheating for decades, and this cover-up still continues. Now, you may wonder, well, are you saying that integration is wrong? You must understand the whole ideal of the Marxist was we cannot change white Anglo-Saxon Protestant America. They are just anti-Marxist. This Protestant work ethic, this Anglo-Saxon resistance to centralized control has got to go. And there's only one way to make it go. you've got to import vast amounts of people from other races who are easier to manipulate and control. And that's why wherever you can get them from, Asia, South America, wherever, I mean, Catholics, Buddhists, Muslims, anything else, anything other than these cursed Protestant Anglo-Saxons, they're the bane of any dictator, because they have this tradition of resistance and critical thinking and standing up and saying no. So you had to integrate in order to crush the distinctives of this completely Protestant culture that dominated America in the 50s. And so integration was critical. By the way, isn't this a lot? Integration means better schools for all. Is there anybody on the planet who believes the schools are better now in America or South Africa since all this busing and so on? From the New York Times of October 1991, we learn that on October the 10th of that year, a committee of researchers at Boston University admitted that there's no question but that Dr. King plagiarized in his doctoral dissertation. However, despite its finding, the committee said that no thought should be given to the revocation of Dr. King's doctoral degree. This is an action that would serve no purpose. So they admitted, okay, he cheated. Now, if you and I did that, they would rip away every honor from us without a second thought. But justice and academic integrity demands, in the light of willful fraud of a student, that the reverend and the doctor should be removed from King's name. And it would be for someone else, but not for him, because he's an idol. I mean, he's a holy cow. You can't make a hamburger out of holy cows. King's famous I Have a Dream speech was not his own. In both the letter and the spirit, the rousing conclusion of King's most famous speech borrows without attribution from a speech given 11 years earlier by his family friend Archibald Carey, notice, in 1952 at the Republican National Convention. By the way, did you know that Martin Luther King Jr. was a Republican? And he borrowed the speech of a colorblind society where you judge by the content of the character, not by the color of your skin. He borrowed it from an 11 years earlier speech given at a Republican convention. This wasn't that revolutionary at all. While gathering and collating King's writings for publication in the late 1980s, the editors of Stanford University's Martin Luther King Jr. Papers Project discovered what they called extensive plagiaries in his academic papers, including in his 1955 doctoral dissertation. All these instances of plagiarism had apparently escaped detection during King's lifetime. Not likely, but they just didn't care. By all his supervisors, including his dissertation supervisor at Boston University, it's not possible that they missed the fact that this man doesn't have the intellectual capacity to be awarded a PhD, but they did it anyway.
But the same goes for Obama. I mean, this is such a parallel of Obama, isn't it?
There is no evidence that Obama even attended the colleges. Mm. He's not in any yearbooks. Nobody who attended those years remembers him being there. There's no evidence. Nobody can find any of his papers or any of the theses here. Nothing. It's a fraud. It says all his academic records are missing as his birth certificate. J. Edgar Hoover, the director of the FBI, called King America's most notorious liar. Now, Ralph David Abernathy is one of the closest friends and allies of Martin Luther King. He was with him in the marches. He was right there marching and the 63 March in Washington and so on. He was one of the key organizers in the Southern, the SLCS. And he's written a book, And the Walls Came Tumbling Down. What he means by And the Walls Came Tumbling Down is he admits in here about, yeah, well, we did know about Martin Luther King's plagiarisms and lies and adulteries and the serial affairs and the multiple sex orgies and the sexual deviancy and the adulteries. And yes, we did know about that. But, you know, what he is saying was so important, and he was the figurehead of the movement, so we couldn't allow this to come into light. So he's talking about the walls of all of these great beliefs they had about the hero, and he's admitting we did know it was a fraud. King was not a legitimate reverend. He was not a bona fide PhD. His name wasn't really Martin Luther King Jr. So what's left? Just a sexual degenerate with a Marxist agenda. On Labor Day 1957, a special meeting was attended by Martin Luther King and four others at a strange institution called the Highlander Folk School in Mont Eagle in Tennessee. It was a communist front. The Highlander Folk School was run by the Communist Party USA, founded by Miles Horton, Communist Party organizer for Tennessee, and Don West, the Communist Party organizer for North Carolina. And there's a picture of Martin Luther King in the front row, surrounded by Communist Party USA members receiving his indoctrination. The leaders of this meeting with King were Horton and West, along with Abner Berry and James Domrosky, all open acknowledged members of the Communist Party of the United States of America. The agenda of the meeting was a plan to tour the southern states to initiate demonstrations and riots. From 1955 to 1960, Martin Luther King's associate, advisor, and personal secretary was Bernard Rustin, this man here. So there's MLK, and this is Rustin. Rustin, in 1936, joined the Communist Party Youth League at New York City College. He's convicted of draft dodging. He went to prison for 2 years in 1944. In 1953, he was sentenced to jail for 60 days for lewd, vagrancy, and homosexual perversion. That's what the charge sheet states. Rustin now is a folk hero with signs like these in America. They call him a civil rights leader and pacifist organizer. He's a member of the Communist Party of USA. I mean, what a bunch of lies. But this is just an example of how don't think you can believe what's put out on these historical plaques. Rustin attended the 16th convention of the Communist Party USA in February 1957. That's smack in the middle of while he was serving from 55 to 60. He was the closest associate to Martin Luther King, his personal assistant and secretary. And during that time, he's attending the Communist Party National Convention. A month later, he and King founded the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, or SCLC for short. The president of the SCLC, of course, was Martin Luther King Jr. The vice president was Reverend Fred Shuttleworth, who was also the president of an identified communist front, which is known as the Southern Conference Education Fund. And that organization's field director was Mr. Carl Braden, who is simultaneously a sponsor of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee and a known member of the Communist Party of America, identified by the FBI. And his wife, Anne Braden, also heavily involved, also a Communist Party member. And this is James Domrosky, also identified communist leader. These were the people around King. The program director of the SCLC was Andrew Young, who later became Jimmy Carter's ambassador to the UN, who in his term in office counted his greatest achievement the betrayal of Rhodesia at the hands of Robert Mugabe, who is still oppressing Zimbabwe 33 years later. Thank you very much. And he became mayor of Atlanta as well. Soon after returning from a trip to Moscow in 1958, Rustin organized the first of King's famous marches on Washington. Rustin met with Leonid Brezhnev, who was the dictator of Russia at that time, or chairman of the party, and the official organ of the Communist Party, The Worker, openly declared this march to be a communist project. All cadres must join this march. And this is the march that Martin Luther King Jr. led. And although he left King's employ as secretary in 1961, Rustin was called upon by King to be a second in command of his much larger march in Washington in 1963. And the culminating point, always this massive idol of Abraham Lincoln, which has the prominent spot in the Washington Mall. Notice, by the way, this is not a chair, this is a throne, and it's like a Greek throne, but notice it's got the Italian fasces, sign of Mussolini's fascist government, also the signs of the Roman Empire. They had these those pillars with the axe actually in it. So this is what the Romans would carry, symbolizing their justice and so on. So it's like a Caesar of Rome, effectively, is the way it's being portrayed. Lincoln would always be where King made his terminal point of his marches in Washington. Bernard Rustin's replacement in 61 as secretary and advisor to King was Jack O'Dell, also known as Hunter Pitts O'Dell. And here you've got Jack O'Dell and Rustin and King. Jack O'Dell was a member of the National Committee of the Communist Party of USA. He wasn't just a member of the Communist Party, he was a member of the National Committee. And he was a member of the Communist Party from as early as 56. Odell was given the job of acting executive director for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference for their activities for the whole of the Southeast, which is their primary focus, the South, the official South of America. And he was involved in coordinating communist parties all over America. When word of Odell's Communist Party membership became known, King fired Odell with much fanfare. But he immediately, without the fanfare, rehired him as director of the New York office of SCLC. And he continued to use him forever afterwards. So it was just a public relations ploy of firing this communist, but he's still there. And in 1963, a black man from North Carolina, Robert Williams, made a trip to Peking, China, where he actually met with the chairman, Mao Zedong. And here you can see him right next to MLK in this march in Washington, exactly 20 days before Martin Luther King's 1963 big march in Washington. Williams successfully urged Mao Zedong to speak out on behalf of King's movement. And the communist Chinese were fully behind him, as were the Soviets. He was their man, and they helped sponsor. Mr. Williams was also around, this time maintaining his primary residence in Cuba. So he actually lives in Cuba and commuted to America. And in Cuba, he made regular broadcasts to the southern U.S. three times a week from high-powered AM transmitters in Havana under the title Radio Free Dixie. Now, Cuba at that time was under Fidel Castro, longest reigning dictator in the world. And Fidel Castro ran dictatorship. Nobody was free to come in or leave Cuba. People have had to make all kinds of rafts and escape across shark-infested ocean waters to get away from this island prison. But Robert Williams could just fly in and out, and he could broadcast from, and the state controlled all the means of communication in Cuba. So I think you can say that Williams was acting with the complete support of the Cuban authorities. And on these radio programs, he urged violent attacks by blacks against white Americans. During this period, Williams also wrote a book entitled Negroes with Guns, and he advised them to steal guns too. Who is the writer of the foreword for his book, Negroes with Guns? None other than the peace-loving Martin Luther King Jr. Did we forget to say Reverend Doctor? It's also interesting to note that the editors and publishers of this book were all supporters of the infamous Fair Play for Cuba Committee, which was a communist front. And here's the FBI's wanted poster for Robert Franklin Williams, who was this pal of Martin Luther King and for whom he could openly write a foreword for the book. I mean, that's pretty blatant. According to King's biographer and sympathizer David Guerra, King privately described himself as a Marxist. In his 1981 book, The FBI and Martin Luther King Jr., Guerra quotes King as saying in his staff meetings of the SCLC, "We have moved into a new era, which must be an era of revolution. The whole structure of American life must be changed. We engage in this class struggle." This is classic Marxism. This is revolutionary terminology. In fact, what did Martin Luther King call his book? The Gospel of Freedom. I mean, that's just another word for liberation theology, which is a false gospel. It's got a false God. Standing behind everything King did is Stanley Levison. Stanley Levison must be described as King's behind-the-scenes handler. And there are hordes of details available, but FBI files and Stanley Levison are not sealed. Stanley Levison was the top bagman for the Soviet Union. He brought money from the Soviet Union and into Canada and from Canada into America, and he supplied all the needs of King. King wanted for no money. It came straight from the Soviet Union. Stanley Levison, hardcore communist. Top.
His name is Jewish.
You'll see in a moment, he's very much a... Levison had for years been charged of the secret funding of Soviet funds to the Communist Party USA. He was the most important man of the Communist Party USA, and FBI agents deeply embedded in the Communist Party USA noted how suddenly, in 1957, Levison had to withdraw from all other activities in the Communist Party USA because he'd been given a more important assignment. The next thing, he surfaces as King's main advisor. And he drops all of his other activities because this is the most important. He was King's mentor. He was actually the brains behind many of King's more successful ploys. There he is. There's King, right next to him. In fact, Levison is the only white friend that King had in his inner circle. It was Levison who edited King's book Stride Towards Freedom. It was Levison who arranged for the publisher. Levison even prepared King's income tax returns. This is one of the most senior members of the Communist Party who said threw up everything he had there to become the assistant to King, because this was his man. It was Levison who really controlled the fundraising and agitation activities of the SCLC. And Levison wrote many of King's speeches. King described Levison as one of his closest friends, which, considering how much he hated whites, it's extraordinary. This is the one white who was a close friend. All these landmark speeches and essays, Levison wrote them all, the whole bunch. The Federal Bureau of Investigation had for many years been aware of Stanley Levison's communist activities, and he was being monitored because there were these embedded, he didn't know that he was being watched because there were some of these people who had been disenchanted with communism after the Second World War who had become FBI informants. And there's a whole range of information available on the internet about that. And so they know. Levison's close association with King brought about the initial FBI interest in King. There's King, there's Levison. This is the inner circle. They're planning. Here's Levison. Now, what is he carrying here? And why? What on earth has that got to do with it? But notice how they're carrying the little American flags, pretending that they're patriotic. Lest you be tempted to believe the controlled media's lie about racists and the FBI were out to get King, be aware that the man most responsible for the FBI's probe of King was actually Assistant Director William Sullivan. Sullivan described himself as a liberal, and he really was a liberal. And he said initially, I was 100% for King, because I saw him as an effective and badly needed leader for black people in their desire for civil rights. In fact, there's a lot of people who thought Martin Luther King was standing for justice and equality, and this was good. Here's Charlton Heston, a hardcore conservative, standing, marching with, quote from Thomas Jefferson, all men are created equal. And he was part of King's march on Washington 1963. Here's Charlton Heston in this march. They called it a march for jobs and freedom, which sounded good. Of course, he rejects it all now, but at the time, he thought this is legitimate. Here you can see it, Lincoln's Memorial, Marlon Brando, Charlton Heston. And here you can see Paul Newman, Marlon Brando, James Garner, all at the march in Washington 1960. This is a popular thing. These are Burt Lancaster and Charlton Heston. This is the place where Hollywood actors, they were all there. We for equality, for freedom, for human rights, for civil rights. This was a popular move. But they didn't realize they were being used for a communist front. And here you see Sidney Poitier, famous actor as well, involved in this march. And John F. Kennedy was so positive towards Martin Luther King. Here's Martin Luther King being received by President Kennedy, because President Kennedy liked what King was standing for. And here is Robert Kennedy, who, by the way, was the Attorney General, who ordered the wiretaps on King later. He didn't want to. He resisted the FBI's demands for it for years, because he liked King and King's leftist agenda. And here's Johnson. President Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, launched the whole war on poverty, and under him, most of the civil rights things were... He wanted most of what Martin Luther King claimed to be wanting. These people were for him. I mean, in fact, Robert Kennedy, who was the Attorney General, who refused the FBI's demands to tap his phones for years, although they were doing it anyway, and later did order it, he did it because of Levison. Now, these people, Robert and, you should say, as I say, Bobby and Martin, they were actually pals. And Robert Kennedy was no conservative. He was as leftist as they come. He was as sympathetic to the openly proclaimed, as opposed to the secret agenda of Martin Luther King. In fact, Lyndon Johnson called for Martin Luther King when evidence came that everyone around him was a communist. Called him into the White House to privately warn him, do you realize that Levison's a communist? Do you realize that Ruskin's a communist? Do you realize these people are using you? And he warned him. He showed him the documentation. person. I mean, imagine the president took that much interest because they liked what King stood for. And they believed his marches were helping them to push through the legislation they wanted to push through. But when they saw the results, Robert Kennedy had to finally allow the FBI to openly tap all of his phones and to intercept his mail and so on. Because the reason is, their probe not only confirmed the suspicions about King's communist beliefs and associations, but their investigations revealed King to be, quote, a hypocrite, an immoral degenerate, and a charlatan.
Peter, just explain the three-pronged attacks there. Christ and the Bible.
Attacks on Christ and the Bible.
Yeah.
The United States American Law and Order. The Church League of America put out this document in 68 showing how Martin Luther King was actually attacking all these levels. He was not a Bible believer. He was not a Christ-centered person. He was a liberation theologian. He was a Marxist. But we're going to prove that. According to Assistant Director Sullivan, who had direct access to these surveillance files on King, which are denied the American people, King had embezzled or misapplied substantial amounts of money contributed to the civil rights movement. Embezzled a lot. King used SCLC funds to pay for liquor, numerous prostitutes, both black and white, who were brought to his hotel rooms, often two at a time, for drunken sex parties, which sometimes lasted for days. And these types of activities, Sullivan said, were normative for King's speaking and organizing tours. While he was preaching in churches, he was whoring and drinking up. He was a whoremongering drunkard at night. The National Civil Rights Museum in Memphis, Tennessee, which is putting on display the two bedrooms from the Lorraine Motel, where King stayed the night before he was shot, they've declined to depict in any way the occupants of those rooms. Here's the monument outside. Notice there is the cross, and there is a five-pointed star. What's the star represent? No, this is the communist star, as far as I can see. They said to one another, "Behold, here comes a dreamer. Let us slay him and see what becomes of his dreams." Isn't that quite clever? And who's put this up? Ralph David Abernathy, the one who wrote the expose and the walls came tumbling down. He knew the man was a fraud, but he is good for their cause, still. But they said to depict the occupants of the room would be close to blasphemy. Blasphemy? The reason? Martin Luther King Jr. spent the last night on earth having sex with two women in his motel and physically beating and abusing a third. And we won't tell you what the FBI transcripts say about the swearing and the vile language this man would use in the rooms. Absolutely X-rated. And yet this hotel now has got... They put the quotes of Martin Luther King and on the boards. This is now, people come to see, this is the bedroom. This is where he was. And this is a place of pilgrimage now. Sullivan also states that King had alienated the affections of numerous other married women. In other words, he committed adultery and convinced others to. According to Sullivan, who in 30 years with the FBI had seen everything there was to be seen of the steamy side of life, you can be sure, King was one of the seven people he had encountered who was a total degenerate. He said he's one of the seven worst people I've ever come across in 30 years in the Bureau. Noting that the violence that almost invariably attended King's supposed non-violent marches, Sullivan's probe revealed a very different King from the carefully crafted public image. King welcomed members of many different black groups as members of his SCLC, many of them advocates and practitioners of violence. King's only admonition on the subject was that they should embrace tactical nonviolence. Tactical nonviolence means we must seem to be peaceful. Here is a National Association of Colored People meeting. These three are straight commie members. Gus Hall, Henry Winstone, William Patterson, members of the Communist Party USA, cheerfully part of his board. Here's Muhammad, a black Muslim chief meeting with MLK. Here's part of his marches too. No problem with the Muslims. Here's Floyd McKissick of CORE, who's one of the most radical communist groups imaginable. And another, Jesse Gray of CORE. And CORE's tactics were to go into shops and just dump everything to create, clog up the places and just create social chaos. And then they left with courtesy of CORE. Fred Shuttleworth, another hardcore Communist Party member. These were the inner circle of MLK. he was obviously a Marxist. Yes, they would march with American flags to make it look like they were patriotic. But, in fact, this is the fruit. Notice here, the people they are marching with, these radicals, they'll take sometimes get out of Vietnam. Why? They went in Vietnam to try and stop the communists taking over. So, stop the bombing, of course, while they are doing bombing of their own. And this is on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. But what followed? Burning, bombing, destruction, riots, the Watts riots. These are rifles confiscated from the peaceful demonstrators. The Watts riots, absolute destruction, vast amounts of death, entire neighborhoods burned out, the National Guard having to be turned out. This is what transpired after one of the demonstrations here in 1965, police finding a Muslim flag amongst the debris of all the chaos that these people had caused. Some of the weapons confiscated from the peaceful marches of these pacifist rallies, and destruction of cars, bombing of buildings, burning and bombing of houses, firebombing of homes. All of this was part of the campaign. This is entrance to Berkeley University, one of the most radical universities in America. On the way in, you see all these different campaigns. Well, just get a feel for it. These are buttons that FBI took off people who were part of the marches. Kill for peace. God is dead. Bring peace to Vietnam. Replace J. Edgar Hoover. Mm-hmm. Black Panthers. They were a black terrorist movement who hijacked aircraft. Fight for socialism. Workers of the World Unite. Whose picture is that? Oh, that's Karl Marx. And the Viet Cong never called me a nigger. So, in other words, the Viet Cong, which is short for communists, are good. And disarm the army and the police. Arm for sexual freedom, if it moves, fondle it. Legalize narcotics for addicts. Legalize contraceptives for teenagers. Let's legalize pot. Defrock the John Birch cops. John Birch Society was. John Birch is a great missionary to China who died for Christ in China in a communist concentration camp. That a very conservative organization, American, named the organization after. It's an information group called the John Birch Society. Equality for homosexuals. You see, this isn't just communist revolution, this is sexual revolution. Yeah. This is revolution against everything Christian. R.J. Rushdoony said, men prefer an order that permits sin and forbids freedom. They see God's law as tyranny because it's control of sin, whereas they prefer controls and freedom and a license to sin. So just think of these South Africans and think, okay, we've lost our freedoms and yes, we've got to pay a lot of taxes for very little service delivery and yes, there's a lot of violence and a lot of crime and we might get murdered any time and the driving's dangerous and these taxi drivers are bad and the government's corrupt and they do steal a lot. But pornography's legal and abortion's legal and gambling's legal. And we can get cable TV even soon with porn on. So, you know, that makes up for the facts of all these bad things. Okay, our children are being brainwashed with a lot of useless junk and schools are dysfunctional. But, you know, when you think of the good things, we've got all these vices legalized. So people prefer sin and tyranny than freedom from tyranny. They want the license. And it's the Attorney General, Robert Kennedy, who was actually would have counted himself a friend of MLK, he had to very grudgingly in the end authorize the FBI to do taps, which actually they were doing already, on MLK, and this came up with this absolute snake pit of information that they didn't know what to do, and that's why judges have to seal it and said, this is not getting published till 2027. It would destroy an American idol to bring it out. But there's some people who are not so restricted. People like Julia Brown, FBI undercover agent, has gone around speaking about what she knew from her infiltrations, and she's got the freedom to do that. And a lot of the things that I've said have come from people like this, such as Sullivan, who wrote this book and so on. But the actual transcripts of the tapes are kept away. But we know a lot of what's on it through people like this. The man was a sexual degenerate, deviant, thief, Marxist, liar, plagiarist. And that's just touching a few of the high points. King met in financial conferences with Communist Party representatives, not knowing that some of the participants were infiltrators actually working for the FBI. So this is documented. J. Edgar Hoover, head of the FBI, personally sought that documented information on King's communist connections was afforded to the President and to Congress. He put it in their hand. Conclusive information from FBI files were also provided to the major newspapers and newswire services, but they didn't print it. Because MLK was representing what they wanted represented, and they didn't care how much feet it played. You just think how media can cover up stories when it suits them, but open up and even time things. Because in the 1960s, the controlled media and politicians were determined to push the racial mixing program in America. They had to. The only way to stop America being this bastion of Protestant, white Anglo-Saxon faith and work ethic was racial mixing. I mean, how else were they going to destroy the country? King was their man, and nothing was allowed to get in their way, and so with a few minor exceptions, these facts have been kept from the American people. The pro-King propaganda machine grinds on, and many Christians publicly quote MLK more prominently than many Bible passages. In fact, in a three-hour graduation service at the Cornerstone University across the road, I didn't hear one Bible quote. Maybe I missed one. There was one very nice hymn, but I don't recall one Bible quote. I don't remember anyone quoting, and I was taking notes. I don't recall anyone quoting from Jesus or any of the apostles or any of the reformers or any of the great missionaries or any of the church fathers. No one quoted from Augustine or Luther or Calvin. No, but they quoted from Martin Luther King repeatedly, profusely, everyone did, and from Mandela and from Voltaire and from Mahatma Gandhi, of course. And that's a Christian university. What are the forces and motivation behind the controlled media's active promotion of Martin Luther King? I mean, this is like Chairman Mao size in Tiananmen Square. What does it tell you about our politicians when you see them almost without exception falling over themselves to honor King as an international hero? What does it tell you about a society when any public criticism of this very flawed individual is considered grounds for dismissal? You can lose your job as a journalist, you can lose your job as a professor in a university, you can be kicked out of almost any position if you express the kind of things that I've just said right now. The only reason I can say this is I'm not employed by those people. And I don't care. What does it tell you about the controlled media when you see how they've successfully suppressed the truth and held out a picture of King that can only be described as propaganda? And that's a polite term. King was under FBI surveillance for several years until he died due to his ties with communist organizations throughout the country. King accepted money from organizations, communist organizations, to fund his movements. In return, he had to appoint communist leaders to run certain districts of his Southern Christian Leadership Conference, who then could project the communist ideas to a large audience. So he was the best gift the Communist Party ever had in America. He is the most effective recruiter for the Communist Party they ever had, and the most effective mobilizer. The Communist Party couldn't have organized such big marches to Washington, but they could get it through him. A federal judge in the 60s ruled that the FBI files on King's links to communism remained top secret until 2027. All the transcripts and all the tapes of all the bugging of all his rooms through all those years, nobody's allowed to see it. Senator Jesse Helms appealed to the Supreme Court in 1983 to release these files so that the bill that was being debated in the Senate to create the Martin Luther King holiday could be abolished. He was denied access to it. He said it's essential for us to be able to. If we're going to have a holiday in the name of this man, we should have access to his files. Yes. Nope, not allowed. And so here you've got this man who's able to pull himself out of the stone. Now, there are some people who've got the courage to put out adverts like this on the internet and elsewhere. Which holiday honors a philanderer, a drunk, a liar, a plagiarist, and a cheater? FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover said the most notorious liar in the country. J. Edgar Hoover described him, King, as a tomcat with obsessive degenerate urges. Former President Lyndon Johnson called him that hypocritical preacher, and William Sullivan called him a total degenerate. Here's evidence. People put out tracts and leaflets exposing that King was definitely a friend, an associate, and close partner with the communists. A total fraud. His name wasn't Martin Luther King. He was Michael King. He wasn't a reverend. He wasn't a doctor. He only earned his degree through plagiarism and cheating. He was a sexual deviant, a thief, and a liar. And a woman beater, and a subversive, and they added a few other things too. Martin Luther, a fraud. There's a website, martinlutherking.org, where you'll get all of this and much, much more. Another idol is Malcolm X. Notice how Obama has very much tried to mold himself in the MLK image. And notice this blasphemous title of Newsweek magazine, The Second Coming. And this is actually, it's not referring, it's got double meaning. It's not just telling the people that he's been elected for a second time. It's suggesting this is Martin Luther King raised from the dead. That is actually what many of them are saying. That's not a theory of mine. That's actually what some of these idiots are saying. This is the resurrection of Martin Luther King. So Martin Luther King reincarnated. How do you control a nation? Distract them. Deceive them. Divide them. Indoctrinate them and disarm them. The four D's and an I. The price of apathy towards public affairs is to be ruled by evil men. The Roman leader Cicero, 42 BC, said, a nation can survive its fools, even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and he openly carries his banners. But the traitor moves amongst those within the gate freely. His sly whispers, rustling through the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself. For the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks and acts as familiar to his victims. He wears their face and their garments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of a city. He infects the body politic so it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to be feared. Aldous Huxley, in 1932, published The Brave New World. The book describes a future state of human slavery where people live carefree lives in technologically advanced societies, subdued by drugs and bombarded with endless stimulations and distractions. Is that not prophetic? And now we see the 20th century idols of atheism, humanism, communism becoming mainstream. And MLK is one of the key tools in the left's hands. Governments do not want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. That's against their interest. They want obedient workers, just smart enough to run their machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept it. It's not a tragedy to government if the schools are dysfunctional. They don't want intelligent people. Know your parasites. Ticks and leeches suck blood until they've had enough, then they drop off. But these parasites, the banks and politicians, don't know when to stop. They just keep leeching. This is serious. Propaganda. Think of the propaganda that just lifted up 33 years ago. This nobody, this Mugabe. Robert Mugabe is a wonderful, great, lovely man, educated, erudite. In fact, he even spoke with an English accent at first. But you know, he unleashed such devastation and destruction on Zimbabwe, turning that paradise into a hellhole, that breadbasket of Africa into a basket case with his communist policies, his racism, his hatred. But this is the fruit of propaganda too, because it was the same friends of Martin Luther King who brought this about. Andrew Young, as the main representative of America at the time, worked to bring Mugabe to power. Mugabe is just like another Martin Luther King. These people are the same, and the victims are the same. Their tactics are the same. Silence in the face of evil is itself evil. God will not hold us guiltless for being cowards. The fact is, propaganda kills. We need to study the truth in the Bible so that we can be freed from the deceptions of the world. It is better to be divided by truth than united in sin. It is better to speak the truth that hurts than falsehoods that comfort. It is better to be hated for telling the truth than liked for telling a lie. It is better to stand alone with the truth than to be wrong with the multitude. And I'm afraid in this one, the multitude are wrong. That which can be destroyed by the truth should be destroyed. And people say, oh, you shouldn't bring this out. I mean, many people, they've got such a lovely impression of Martin Luther King. You say this, you're going to destroy the... But if it's a lie, it must be destroyed. Definition of stupid, knowing the truth, seeing the truth, but still believing the lies. I'm not going to censor myself to comfort your ignorance. Another person put it. You can lead a man to knowledge, but you cannot make him think. Now, the knowledge is there, Cornelius van Til said there is then not a square inch of space, not a minute of time, when the believer in Christ can withdraw from the responsibility of being a soldier of the cross. Satan must be driven from the field and Christ must rule. And that includes in history. It doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter what I say, and it doesn't matter what they say. All that really matters is what the Bible says. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.